This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. With the new year, 2019, we say goodbye to the old one, 2018. And that's a big goodbye because there was a lot of big news in 2018. With me to talk about that is San Antonio Express News columnist Gilbert Garcia. We're going to talk about the big stories, the ups and downs of San Antonio, Texas, the state, the nation, the galaxy for 2018. Gilbert Garcia, welcome back.
Thank you.
Without getting into the nitty-gritty, we'll get into the nitty-gritty. I just wanted to kind of, if you could get an overall characterization of, was 2018 a good year or a bad year for San Antonio?
I think on balance, I think you'd have to say it was a bad year. If we think of the city governance, because there was so much conflict, so much turbulence, and a lot of distractions, and I think that it kind of impeded the city government from getting some of the things done that they wanted to get done. So it's going to be interesting to see how that affects 2019. But I think people at City Hall would probably say that this was a very tough year.
I'm sure the things that come to mind immediately are going to be the beatdown that City Hall took during the propositions A, B, C.
Yeah, and this was really the culmination of conflict that had been building between our public safety unions and City Hall over the last 4 or 5 years. 2 years ago, the Police Officers Association was able to resolve their differences with the city, and Ivy Taylor, who was then the mayor, kind of helped broker a deal. And historically, we've seen the firefighters kind of get what people would call Me Too contracts. They would basically get contracts that were very similar to what the police union had accepted. It didn't happen in this case. And I think one of the stories that hasn't really been looked at a lot is that there is kind of a friction that's developed, I think, between the two unions. It's not really talked about a lot publicly, but I think that there's probably some sense with the police union that they wonder sometimes what's going on with the Firefighters Association.
So when you talk to the police union guys and you mention the firefighters, you see the rolling of their
eyes.
Right. And, you know, and this sort of helpless look on their faces, and basically don't associate us with those guys.
That's right. Those guys have gone rogue, and we don't know what they're doing. And I think that they look at, you know, the firefighters have, in not signing a new contract, they've gone into this evergreen phase of their contract, which means they've kept their benefits, but they haven't gotten any raises. And I think the police officers tend to look and think this has been really foolish on their part. In Houston, we saw the issue of firefighters fighting for pay, trying to fight pay disparity, trying to get pay equality with the police union. And I think that San Antonio police officers looked and thought, well, you know, the firefighters in San Antonio have created their own situation where their pay hasn't gone up. But what we saw this year was the conflict between the firefighters and city manager Cheryl Scully kind of reach ahead. They launched a campaign to get 3 charter amendments on the ballot, which they did. And I think it consumed a lot of the attention of city mayor Ron Nuremberg. I think over the past 3 months leading up to the November midterm election, I mean, that was his primary focus, trying to defeat these 3 charter amendments.
Yeah, and he's very frustrated by that. He talks about there's all these things that he wanted to do. He wanted to be spending those energies in order to deal with problems that are facing San Antonio, and then he's not able to because he has to dedicate himself to put out this issue.
And if you think about, you know, ballot initiatives or referendums that our mayors in the past have been involved in, whether it's been, you know, getting a new bond program passed, or in 2012, then Mayor Julian Castro getting pre-K 4SA on the ballot, they were fighting to get to achieve something that they thought would be a step forward for the city. In this case, the mayor was really fighting just to maintain the status quo. And so I think that was really frustrating. In the end, 2 of the 3 charter amendments that were created by the firefighters ended up passing. One that gives them the unilateral power to take contract disputes to binding arbitration, which has already resulted in Fitch, one of the 3 rating agencies, downgrading San Antonio from AAA to AA. And the one that was, I think, the most emphatic statement by the voters was Proposition B, which limits future city managers to no more than 8-year terms, and no more than 10 times the lowest paid city employee, which currently would put the city manager pay at about $300,000. That passed with nearly 60% of the vote. 3 weeks later, city manager Cheryl Skelly announces that she's going to be leaving.
So taken as a whole, it's really hard to digest this story. Right. It's really a bunch of other stories that are going to have a high impact for San Antonio over the coming years. But in 2018, as we look back, you have to wonder, could this have been managed better? Could that campaign been run better to vote no? And I think it could have been run a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
How did we get there? And could this whole thing have been avoided, particularly with City Manager Cheryl Skelly, just weeks after the election and the proposition that would limit the pay and the tenure and also make it harder for the city council to agree on a city manager? That after that passes, she resigned. Had she resigned just before the start of early voting,
mm-hmm.
and saved, and then maybe the firefighters wouldn't have had a face to
That's
put
right.
on that story, on that issue, then the city of San Antonio may have been able to avoid the passage of that.
That's right. And I think one of the things that that was interesting about this is that the city manager pay
I just want to correct myself. I said resigned. Her language is retired.
Right. So I think one of the things that was interesting was that the issue of the city manager pay kind of cut across the ideological spectrum. I mean, I think this charter amendment campaign was really driven by conservatives who thought City Hall is out of control. It's big government run amok. It's social engineering. There was still resentment over the streetcar project from 2014, which the firefighters had also fought against.
So the point I want to get into here is that a lot of this could have been avoided had the City Hall folks been attuned to these trends. And they were out there. When Manuel Medina ran for mayor, and he ran hard against Cheryl Skelly, even though he only got 15% of the vote, he was able to, that should have been the warning sign that they needed to deal with this issue.
That's right. And I mean, I think they could have they could have looked at that and thought, well, he didn't meet expectations. The bond program that year passed by a big margin. And I think the city manager's favorite candidate, though she would have never said this, was Ron Nirenberg. She certainly, he was someone who she had a good relationship with. There was a lot of tension between her and then Mayor Ivy Taylor. So when the election happened in 2017, I don't know what the city manager took from it, but I looked at it and thought, well, this has been a really good election for her. And maybe it was encouraging to her because we now hear her say that she's been thinking about retiring for 2 years. Maybe she came out of that 2017 election and thought, well, things are kind of going well and I'll stay for a while.
What are the chances that someone who is running for re-election for mayor came to Cheryl Skelly and said, hey, you might want to think about retiring? Because had that person ran for re-election for mayor with Cheryl Skelly still being the city manager, they would have lost because that would have been the issue once again.
Yeah. It's the thing about it is that everyone has kind of a different perspective on it. When you're there 13 years, you have a complex record. There was a lot that she did that I think when people step back, they will have a favorable view on. I mean, she professionalized the city staff. She got the city's fiscal house in order, passed these bond programs, had a lot of big projects.
So I hear this all the time. She professionalized the city staff. It just boggles the mind that it was ever like that.
Yeah, I think many people would say she was not the easiest person to work with. There are many stories.
She's tough. That.
She was very tough, but I think that.
But I don't think. You want someone
absolutely.
To be that way.
Absolutely. And there are stories that about maybe some personal vendettas here and there. I mean, I think she had some personal issues with certain people that went beyond the way they performed their jobs. And I think that there were some issues with that. But I think overall, she's someone who she put good people in place for the most part, and I think that she demanded high standards. She demanded efficiency in government. One of the things that was that struck me recently, and I was actually researching something else, but I came across a column by the former columnist of the Express News, Roddy Stinson, who was really the conservative voice of the Express News for a long time, and he was writing a column in 2005 when it looked like she wasn't going to come here from Phoenix, when Ed Garza tried to bring her here, and there was some people on the council didn't want her to get paid so much, so she didn't come. And Roddy Stinson, the conservative voice of the Express News, was really criticizing Julian Castro and Chip Haas, and I think another member of the council, saying, she's someone who could, you know, bring this great fiscal responsibility to San Antonio. We blew our chance, and these liberals, you know, so it seems to me that she's kind of a Rorschach test. You know, it's like at the time she was kind of being championed by conservatives. Now, you know, you have some people on the right, on the Tea Party side, who think she's the epitome of big government. You know?
Right. So, but to be fair, no one takes those Metro columnists very seriously.
Thankfully.
All right, I'm kidding. We're talking with Gilbert Garcia. He is the Metro columnist for the San Antonio Express News. We're talking about the top stories for 2018. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. As the year draws to a close, I was able to talk to some of San Antonio's civic leaders and get their take on 2018 and expectations for 2019. Here's what Mayor Ron Nuremberg had to say.
It was a year of great impact, and not without turbulence through some changes, but I think overall our city is in a much better place closing out 2018 than we were starting it.
How do you think we did with the tricentennial?
You know, after some initial difficulties and challenges getting it up and running in 2017, I think the tricentennial delivered on the mission, which was to demonstrate to ourselves and to the world why people should care about San Antonio and how we have gotten to the place where we are today, which is a premier international city.
Looking at 2019, what's on the to-do list?
Well, first and foremost, we have to continue our efforts to grow our community's economy from the creation of new streams of opportunity for workforce development and, you know, allowing or providing ways for young people to access education and skills training, and for seasoned workers to reskill for 21st century careers. I think that's high on the agenda, as is the development of a community-led effort to reform our transportation system. The framework of that will be delivered, in fact, today, but we look forward to the months that unfold to really get the community-led effort underway.
This is David Hurd, CEO of TechBlock. I think the biggest story has to be UTSA and their recommitment to the development of their downtown campus, which is just great for the city and great for the urban core. But then when you also add in that a lot of that development is going to be centered on new resources for tech skill development, training, and education, whether it's cybersecurity, big data, or even just the business school and as it interrelates to entrepreneurial education in digital economy, careers, and businesses. Super exciting. You know, Graham Weston, I think, was quoted saying it's the biggest thing to happen for downtown in 50 years.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. The new year brings opportunities to look at old stories for 2018. What were the big stories? We're still trying to figure that out. Gilbert Garcia is with me. He is a San Antonio Express News columnist covering the city of San Antonio. And we're still trying to figure out what happened with these propositions. Mm-hmm. So Proposition, was it C? Was that the one about the union and their collective bargaining and having
yes.
binding arbitration?
That's right.
What's interesting about that is that that was lost on Election Day because early voting numbers mm-hmm. came in. They showed that that had failed. The vote no was outnumbered the vote yes. And then the Election Day numbers came in and it flipped. I think that happened because the firefighters and their cohorts were in force, they're out and about, they're in mass, and they're at every polling station in San Antonio, and they were loud. And some of them were even violating rules about
right.
where they could actually be. And they were very aggressive in getting people to vote their way.
Yeah, they were. And I think that you have to look and think, that the Go Vote No campaign, which raised a lot of money, got a lot of money from the business community, and that you have to feel like it underperformed here. You know, considering, you know, you had former mayors getting involved in this campaign, a lot of money, a lot of effort went into it, and to only win one out of three. And I think the one they won was probably the one that they were most concerned about, which would have made it easier to repeal city ordinances by taking it to the voters. But nonetheless, to lose two out of three, I think was really disappointing.
To this bond rating issue that they were saying this was the boogeyman that they trotted
right
out. I think people have a sense that there was an inflation of the threat, mm-hmm, and that this really wasn't going to be that big of a deal. And in fact, the issue that scared the Fitch bond rating the most is this binding arbitration with the firefighters and their contract, because they're concerned about the crowding out of services for the city to pay more and more for our firefighters union.
Right. And you know, the city's lawsuit on the Evergreen, which was, you know, legally it made no sense, which was this Evergreen phase of the lawsuit, for having it for 10 years, is going to force the city into debt. We're, you know, because that, I mean, the idea is a city government has to maintain a balanced budget, and we're going to be forced into debt because the costs of these benefits for the public safety unions is so great, we're going to be forced into debt. Now, of course, the argument was undermined by the fact that while the lawsuit was playing out, we were in Evergreen and we were not going into debt, or even getting close to forced into
debt. That's still too way into the weeds.
But the point is that this issue, which it does concern, I think, the ratings agencies. I mean, I think it's always been a questionable thing as to whether it is going to crowd out other services.
City Council Member Greg Brockhaus, surprised his name hasn't come up already in this conversation. He was the go-to guy for this whole process in trying to get people to vote yes. He is obviously thinking very hard about running for mayor in, mm-hmm, 2019. Where do you see, do you think that his stock is up or down based upon what happened with these propositions?
I think that coming off of the election, the initial reaction would have been to say, you know, he favored the firefighters, he's worked with the firefighters and the police union, and that he's been saying people, you know, the city hall isn't listening to the public, and I've been saying that, and I'm right. Now, I would say since then, and just in the last 5 weeks or so of the year, I think that we've seen developments that would hurt his cause. I think one, the fact that Cheryl Sculley won't be around, or she may still be city manager, but she'll be on her way out when the election happens. And so I think that weakens his cause, because I think he would say that it's not never been all about Cheryl Sculley for him.
He says lots of things.
But the point is that I think it's going to be more difficult, I think, for him to frame an argument with Cheryl Sculley no longer that person that he can focus everything on. The other thing is that while I agree with you that Fitch downgrading the city to AA is not necessarily going to produce these higher interest rates or cost the city as we've been warned, I do think it does sort of confirm the argument of his opposition.
It's something they can point to.
That's right.
And Brockhaus has come out and said that he doesn't even want to have a city manager. He wants to have a strong mayor form of government. Mm-hmm. Is that something that people are willing to buy into?
It's the kind of thing that you could make the argument for, and I mean I don't think it's impossible that the public would support it, because you could make the argument that you're giving more power to the people that you actually elected rather than having an unelected city manager in having greater control. But I think it would be negative for the city. I think that politics comes into it too much when you have the mayor in the administrative role of the city manager. I think that the politics is going to enter into the issues anyway when you have city contracts and so on. But I think that it's a problem. Also, an elected mayor is not necessarily somebody who is going to be the strongest administrator in a way that someone like Cheryl Sculley, who has 30, 40 years as a in that kind of role, would be able to do. So I think the voters could support it. I think it's possible, but I think that it would probably be harmful to the city.
with Cheryl Scully leaving, there are other professional people that work for the city of San Antonio, like Police Chief McManus and the head of the health department, Colleen Bridger. What's their future look like?
Yeah, I think it's an open question. I don't anticipate any problem. I think that the police chief is someone who's had the support of the council for the most part. I mean, he left, decided to come back. I think there were some issues about that process, because that was one of the cases where Cheryl Scully, I think, you know, maybe short-circuited the process a little bit and said, you know, he wants to come back. He called me, said he wants to come back. We've had this process to try to find a successor, but we're just going to put that aside and let him come back. And of course, the council went along with that. So I think that was the only issue that's ever serious issue that's ever come up with him. And I'd be surprised if there would be a problem. Now, if Greg Brockhaus gets elected mayor, you know, we might have a different situation.
Well, there seems to be a target painted on the back of the police chief McManus with this sanctuary city's business. And now the city of San Antonio is being sued by the Attorney General Ken Paxton over that. The conservatives have seemed to have turned against McManus in saying that he is not tough enough on dealing with illegal immigration locally.
Yeah, and I think that there are certainly people in the police union, the leadership of the police union, feels that way about him. But I think he has consistently had the support of a majority of the council and had the support of the various mayors that he served under. So, you know, as I said, if Greg Brockhaus gets in there, we're going to see a different situation. But aside from that possibility, I think that he's in a pretty secure position locally.
The hangover from these propositions, it seemed like we went through a very divisive local political fight, that we had people who were solidly anti and solidly for, and is that going to continue? Is that symptomatic? Is that going to be a problem?
Well, I think we'll see carryover in the mayoral election, especially if Brockhaus runs.
He seems to have a following, but he also has a lot of high negatives.
High negatives. And I think that the question is, like, how strong his support would be citywide. I think that's the really the big question. He certainly would be a force in the election, and he has very, you know, intense support, but I don't know how wide it is. But I think that this is going to continue to be an issue. I mean, we're likely to see the city, you know, we're going to have to wait a couple of years possibly. But I think we're going to see an effort from city leadership to try to, overturn these charter amendments that passed. And so this issue isn't going to go away.
The coming election for the mayor and city council, with the loss of Cheryl Scully, city manager, do you think that there will be a theme of we need to maintain some level of stability in San Antonio in order to continue with the strong growth numbers that we have now?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the tough thing for Mayor Nirenberg, and this is in part because of some issues that he didn't anticipate, dealing with the charter amendment fight and so on, that he hasn't, you know, everything is kind of a work in progress for him. He could point to, for example, putting, you know, $25 million into trying to deal with housing affordability. We're going to see how that plays out. Just as we reach the end of the year, we're getting a broad framework from ConnectSA, the nonprofit dealing with transportation, with a set of ideas for what San Antonio might do going forward. But that, if we have a vote on transportation, that's not going to be till November of 2019. So I think the mayor is going to have to make the argument that we have begun the process of trying to meet the challenges of growing, and we're not there yet, and we haven't really been able to do very much yet, but I think that we're on that path, and we can't go back.
We're talking about the top stories of 2018 with Gilbert Garcia, San Antonio Express News Metro columnist. I'm David Martin Davies. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Before we go to break, let's hear from Bexar County Judge Nelson Wolf.
You know, we had the King and Queen of Spain come to San Antonio. We had a number of major events occurred. We opened the first section of the San Pedro Creek during our tricentennial. We hosted a number of different seminars here on our history. We created the building across the street that we bought behind the courthouse, created a center there for the Alamo Library collection this year. So I think we've really celebrated our history, and we've had some, you know, good economic time in San Antonio. So I think it's been a very good year for us.
What are you looking forward to in 2019?
Well, in 2019, what's going to be interesting to be a new city council election. As you know, there was a little turmoil toward the end of this year. It's going to be interesting to see how that comes out. I think we're going to be moving forward. I know we're moving forward on the second section of the creek. Hopefully we'll tie down the issue of the UTSA downtown on the land that the city and the county loan. I think we'll see the groundbreaking of the new federal courthouse in 2019. And I think we'll continue to see our economy grow in 2019 as we push forward on a number of different ways of growing our economy. So I think it's going to be a good year also.
More Source and 2018 reflections right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. January 1st, the new year is always filled with old traditions. Eat black-eyed peas and menudo in order to make sure you have a prosperous and healthy and wonderful new year. But also, we look back at the stories from the previous year to make sure that we can keep moving forward in the news business. With me to do that is Gilbert Garcia, San Antonio Express News columnist, and I'm David Martin Davies. Some of the big stories for 2018. 2018 was the tricentennial for San Antonio. And so, Gilbert Garcia, what was that like?
Well, it got off to a bumpy start. You know, Cheryl Scully's protege, Edward Benavides, was the person who was put in charge of running it initially. And, you know, there were all kinds of problems with, you know, getting acts for the New Year's Eve show at the end of 2017, and all kinds of questions about...
Well, there was a conflict of interest, and yes. He was giving one media outlet preferential treatment.
Right. And I think when when they had a change in leadership and Carlos Contreras was brought in to take over, I mean, my sense is, and I think most people involved would say, that things started moving a lot more smoothly. I mean, I think what Tricentennial ultimately became, and it was, you know, in my estimation, it was a fairly modest thing, but I think what the idea became was to try to attach Tricentennial to various events that we have in San Antonio anyway, and to just make that part of the awareness of whatever event that we were having. So
if you're going to cut the ribbon on San Pedro Creek, boom, Tricentennial.
And so that's pretty an easy way of just bringing it up. I mean, personally, I don't think Tricentennial like made a big impact on me, and I don't know that how much it meant to the community, but I think that it seemed to have gotten its fiscal house in order, and you didn't have some of the questions that you brought up about conflict of interest and so on. And so I think that it became sort of a part of the conversation. Whatever the city is doing, we're going to make sure that we also make people aware that Tricentennial is part of that.
One of the biggest stories of 2018, we saw the fall of Senator Carlos Uresti. He had already been charged and accused, and a lot had been written about him in the previous year, but it was in 2018 that we actually saw him in court, and it didn't go his way.
Yeah, he was convicted on 11 felony counts related to his involvement with a frac sand company that's now defunct. And he stayed in office through for a few months after the conviction and ultimately was sentenced to 12 years in prison. He still awaits sentencing on a totally separate case. He's pleaded guilty to funneling money to former Reeves County judge on behalf of a company that was trying to get a contract with that county. And so the sentencing will happen in early 2019 for that. But once he was sentenced on the first case, there was really no way he could stay in office. And he resigned in June. And what this was, you know, it's not only a personal tragedy for Carlos Uresti, and he's been kind of the head of what has been a kind of a mini political dynasty in San Antonio. We have Albert Uresti, runs a tax office. We have Tomas, who was a state representative. He got voted out of office this year, and I think that was...
Primaried up.
Yeah, and so I think that was an indication of how toxic the Uresti name has become. But it was, you know, certainly a personal tragedy for him, but I think the bigger impact was that, you know, we've seen in recent years that when you have a special election for a legislative seat, that, unpredictable things can happen because turnout levels are really low. This has been a pretty solid Democratic seat, but it covers a lot of West Texas. In some ways, it's comparable to Will Hurd's congressional seat, but more Democratic. And so what we saw there was a retired game warden named Pete Flores, a Republican, was able to take that seat. He beat former Congressman Pete Gallego in a runoff. And after the November midterm, when the Democrats gained two Senate seats, it really became apparent how big that special election was for Carlos Uresti's seat, because Pete Flores took that race. Republicans have been able to maintain a supermajority in the state Senate going forward, and they're going to be able to get whatever bills they want to get on the Senate floor. They have 19 out of 31 seats. They would have had 18 without that. So that was critical to them, and it really is a seat that should never go to a Republican. But under the circumstances, there were some problems with the Gallego campaign. There was a low turnout, and a big surprise happened there.
You have to wonder about how the local politics is operating in that race. We had a united Bexar County Republican Party. Of course, the party, the local party for the Republicans, is divided on a lot of other issues.
Sure.
And they're having, we can talk about that. But the Bexar County Democratic Party, they were not able to get behind Pete Gallego, and they were not able to deliver a whole lot of services for his election. He was on his own. I wonder if that played a role in this.
Yeah, I think it did. I think there were other issues. I mean, you have to look and think, well, Pete Gallego had lost two congressional races in a row to Will Hurd in 2014, 2016. 2014 was a Republican wave year. That was one thing. 2016 was a year in which we had a presidential election. Hillary Clinton, the Democratic nominee, won that congressional district by 3%, and Pete Gallego still lost it. So that was totally on him. And then he came back in 2018. There were questions, and I mean, this is something I wrote about his residency. He has a home in Austin. His wife and his son live in Austin, and that is not in the district. And I don't think he did a very good job of defending himself on that. And Pete Flores, he went out there and just he's an affable man. He went out there and he just did the retail political work that's required.
He'd been working it for a long time. I got to wonder if George Soros isn't going to start cutting checks for Pete Gallego for asking him not to run for office again.
And look, this is someone, he was in the state legislature for more than 20 years. I think everybody would say he was, solid public servant, effective public servant. He knows policy. But when you lose three elections in a row, I think it's got to tell you something. And my sense is that he's interested in running for something in 2020. He's giving off those kinds of signs.
Another politician who had a fall from grace was our district attorney, Nicola Hood. Right. He was primaried out by Joe Gonzalez, and now he will be hanging up his DA lanyard at the end of the year. What happened there?
Well, he would say that the Democratic Party has moved so far to the left that there's no room for him anymore, that he sees himself as somewhat of a moderate. I think he's referred to himself as kind of a Bill Clinton type of Democrat, or that's what he was, and that there's no room for him anymore. I would agree that the party has moved to the left in recent years. I mean, there's no doubt about that, but I don't think that has anything to do with what happened to him. When you look at the district attorney's office, ultimately it's about prosecuting criminals. It's about dealing, handling criminal cases with fairness. And I think Democrats were really happy to see a Democrat elected in 2014 because Susan Reed, there was a perception that she had, in an effort to look tough, had maybe, had a sort of draconian approach to criminal justice.
Well, she had held back certain programs.
Sure.
one of trying to lessen criminal penalties for marijuana possession,
sure.
And also would not allow a needle exchange program to move forward. And there's a lot of prosecutorial discretion that a DA has.
So I think that after 16 years with Susan Reed there, I think Democrats were eager to have someone who would take a different approach, which he had often promised that he would do. And my sense is that a lot of the problems that Nicole Hood ran into were for things that really didn't necessarily have to do with the district attorney's job. For instance, he used his office to go on a campaign against vaccination.
Claims he did not use his office for that. He was speaking as a private citizen when he said that vaccinations cause autism.
In the video,
in which he
talked about it, and I'll say, in fairness to him, it's a very personal issue for him. He has a son who's on the spectrum. He's talked about that, and Nico LaHood and his wife believe that vaccinations played a role in that, and so it's a very personal issue for him. But he did shoot a video in which he described himself as a district attorney, used his office, and I think that became an issue for a lot of people. Also, he had made a habit of appearing on conservative talk radio, particularly with Joe Pags,
he would come on our radio too.
But he in appearing on those shows, and particularly in his appearances with Joe Pags, he made some I think blanket assessments about Muslims and Sharia law, and I think a lot of the controversy that he got into was he created a sense that he was a social conservative, and I think, again, some of the things he said on talk radio really had nothing to do with the implementation of his job, but I think that it started to color the way people saw him. And then there was also the incident in court in which he allegedly threatened, attorneys that he was going up against, that he was going to, shut them down.
Yeah, one of them
was Joe Gonzalez, who ended up running against him. And I think the question is, would Joe Gonzalez have run if that hadn't happened? Now, Nicole Hood again says that it didn't happen exactly the way it was described, but this I think some of those factors, which I think started to create a sense in people's mind, not only that he was a social conservative, but also that people started to question his temperament, his judgment, and that, I think, created an opening for Joe Gonzalez.
But he also created new diversion programs and also filed a lot more felony cases in the years when he was DA than the previous district attorney. That's why we have elections, these things out.
Again, I would say if some of the things that happened that really that did not involve necessarily prosecuting cases, but had to do with his messaging and how he presented himself to the public, I think those things I've talked to him about it. I've said, I really don't think, I think there would have been room for a moderate Democrat, because a lot of the people don't necessarily perceive the district attorney's office in ideological terms. They want someone who they perceive as fair. Therese Hunsinger, I think she lost that election by about 50 votes. It was an incredibly close primary. And she's someone who had served as a prosecutor in the past. And so, and I think she was not, a particularly liberal Democrat. I think she, she was someone who, was tough on crime, which is what people want from a prosecutor anyway, as long as they sense that person is fair and can distinguish between, people who are really a threat to the community and people who are not. And so I think again, I think a lot had to do with messaging.
Missed. She was missed. I think it would have been nice to see her throw her hat in a ring this last go around.
This last time, yeah.
Joe Gonzalez, he's now the new DA. Did he overpromise? He's making lots of promises about having compassion for the vulnerable, but also enforcing the law for public safety.
Yeah, you can't anticipate what you're going to be dealing with. You can't anticipate what kind of cases are going to come up. And I think that you have to, you just have to deal with the cases that are before you. There's always going to be controversy in that office. And I think that, one of the things that was talked about during the election was the elimination of cash bail. I think that's a big criminal justice issue. I think he'll have limited power to be able to do something about that. But I think that
reforming the public defender's office.
Yeah, that's a big one too.
Those things have got to go through the commissioner's court, but they're not going to move unless the DA supports.
That's right. So I think his support is necessary, but it might not be enough. But I think he will have a pretty sympathetic commissioner's court if he really does decide to push those issues?
My name is Graciela Sanchez, and I work for the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. I'm a buena gente, which means good people. And we work in the city to fight for the rights of the most marginalized in San Antonio. For me personally, 2019, I have to be hopeful. That's part of what the name Esperanza means. It means hope. I'm hopeful because there are a lot of young people in San Antonio that are, you know, jumping up and saying, we want to make changes to improve our lives, to improve the lives of everyone, to make our environment a great place to live in. And we're the ones that have to lead. And that's exciting to me.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, looking at the big stories for 2018 with Gilbert Garcia, San Antonio Express News columnist. And I think scooters, 2018, if you had to have one thing to put out there like an icon, what is 2018 for San Antonio? Those scooters might be the thing.
It's the solution to our transportation problems, I think.
Oh, yeah, we're all going to be on scooters. That's up on down 1604, zip, zip, zip.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, one of the items presented in this Connect SA framework has to do with dedicated protected lanes for bicycles and for scooters. And I mean, I think it's a good idea because I work downtown; they're all over the place, and it's kind of the Wild West there as far as what kind of rules people are following. I mean, some people are out in the streets, some people are on the sidewalks. You know, I mean, we've had some people having accidents. We've had people knocked down by them. I think it's a positive development, I think, for the city because they're helping people get around. But we're still in the process of figuring out, how we're going to enforce the rules we have and how people are still kind of figuring out what they're doing about them. And of course, they're just, you know, they're just left on sidewalks, you know, everywhere you go and left we're sometimes blocking people who are disabled and so on. So, you know, with any new development, there are going to be problems, but they've certainly, it didn't take long for them to make a big impact in San Antonio.
Do you think this is a transition period that we will get to a point where scooters will have maybe a dedicated lane, that they will be just part of ordinary life here, and there will no longer be this strange new object on our roadways? The vitriol will simmer down and help make the transition to biking.
Yeah, I think they will. They are going to have their own lanes. I think that's one of the if you look at the proposals from Connect SA, that's, I think, one of the things that would be the most achievable and would make the most sense because they are just becoming such a big part of the community in such a short time. So I think that we're going to see that. The big issue with them really at this point is just safety because people are adjusting to them. But yeah, I think we're going to see that.
And in 2018, it was the year of the blue wave or was it?
Well, we saw in the state of Texas, a turnout bump of nearly 80% compared to the 2014 midterm. We had about 4.7 million people vote that year. I think about 8.4 million this year. A lot of it was attributed to the excitement created by U.S. Senate candidate Beto O'Rourke, who lost to Ted Cruz, but came closer than we've seen anybody on the Democratic side statewide in more than two decades. So I think it was certainly a national blue wave. And I think in Texas, we saw what Democrats been promising for years. We actually saw some tangible results this year. We saw the big turnout numbers. We saw a series of really close statewide races. We saw Democrats gain 12 seats in the House, two in the state Senate, a couple of congressional seats. Gene Ortiz Jones almost beat Will Hurd to capture a third congressional
Medina
seat.
Medina County, baby.
Yeah, I think that you have to look and think. There's no question that in Bexar County we did see a blue wave, and I mean the Democrats just pretty much swept Republicans out of the courthouse, and we had people like Jerry Rickoff, who's been the county clerk for ages.
Rickoff free.
Yeah, that's right. And neither Jerry nor Tom will be a presence there. And so we saw, you know, that it was just one of those elections where we saw a lot of straight ticket voting on the Democratic side, and in Bexar County, it was just a really big night for the Democrats.
So with Beto O'Rourke coming out of his defeat for U.S. Senate is being talked about as a very popular candidate for president, a Democratic nomination. That would be kind of a first, you know, to coming from a loser position to being seen as someone who could win the presidency. But also, San Antonio former mayor and HUD secretary Julian Castro, both of them will be vying for that job.
Yeah, I mean, we're still waiting to find out what Beto O'Rourke is going to do, but he's sounding very much like a presidential candidate. And, you know, we have not had a Texas Democrat run for president in 42 years since Lloyd Benson, and he got out of the race before any of the primaries actually started. So people probably don't even remember that he ran. So this is going to be a really different situation. Because Beto O'Rourke has become such a national phenomenon, it does make things more difficult for Julian Castro. People have said, well, you know, you don't necessarily need to pit these two against each other. And I think that's true. But at the same time, they're both in their mid-40s. They're both from Texas. One is a South Texas Latino. The other is, you know, grew up on the border. And I think that Beto O'Rourke has already built sort of kind of a national following. And I think for Julian Castro, he's trying to sort of elbow his way into what's going to be a very crowded field. And I think Beto O'Rourke's presence, it causes a problem for him only in the sense that he's already reached, I think, the audience that Julian Castro is trying to reach. And I think that would be where he would cause a problem for him.
Well, Beto O'Rourke has proven that he can raise money. He raised a lot of money for that race against Ted Cruz. And that seems to be the thing that people are very excited about, and that he's coming across as a moderate. And that's why you're seeing a lot of anti-Beto backlash online now, mainly coming from people who are hoping for Bernie Sanders run.
You know, the success that Democrats have had, if we go back, you know, 60 years, I mean, it's generally been with young figures who created some sense of inspiration. I mean, John Kennedy people didn't vote for him because of, you know, his specific policy positions, but just this sense that he was talking about moving the country forward. He was young, passing the torch to a new generation. We saw this with Jimmy Carter. We saw it with Bill Clinton. We saw it with Barack Obama. When Democrats have been successful, it's usually been with an inspirational figure who is uplifting. And I think that people see that in O'Rourke. Yes, he doesn't have as much experience as other candidates. Barack Obama didn't have as much experience as Hillary Clinton. John Kennedy was the least experienced of the Democratic options in 1960. That's not what Democrats have generally gone for and when they've been successful.
2019 will be a big year for San Antonio. You think the mayor's race will be the thing that will probably suck up the most oxygen in the short term?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that Mayor Nuremberg is in a unique position in that he as we pointed out earlier, he's had so much to deal with that he didn't want to or didn't anticipate having to deal with. And he's going to have to, make the case that his agenda is a work in progress, but that he's taking us there. And I think it's a more difficult case than, say, Julian Castro or Phil Hardberger had when they were running for their second term.
Gilbert Garcia, Express News Metro columnist. I want to thank you so much for joining us as we look back at 2018.
Thank you very much.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.